Welcome to The Trend on WNIN-FM. I'm John Gibson, and we're calling today's show Uncommon Education. The Indiana legislature is about to drop the federal Common Core standards that are being used in 45 other states. Supporters of the move say Indiana should be able to set its own education standards. Opponents say dropping Common Core will put the Hoosier State out of step with the rest of the country. We'll hear shortly from the superintendent of the Evansville-Vanderburgh School Corporation, David Smith, and the corporation's head of academics, Valinda Stubbs. But first, a little background on what's happening at the State House. I asked Ellie Moxley of State Impact Indiana to bring us up to date on the legislation that will officially drop Common Core.
Lawmakers right now are considering a proposal that would void the Common Core adoption of nationally crafted standards that the State Board made back in 2010. Now, all of that that's happening at the State House, it's a little superfluous at this point because Indiana is actually already on track to adopt different standards other than the Common Core based on legislation that passed last session. State lawmakers kicked the Common Core back to state education officials for a year-long review. That's been going on, and actually draft standards that were crafted by Indiana educators and with input from, you know, Indiana parents are being considered right now.
So the process has already begun. Now, is Governor Pence expected to sign this legislation that would officially drop Common Core?
You know, I really think that one of the reasons Indiana has moved this far in the process to exit the Common Core initiative is because of Governor Pence. He has made it very clear that he does not favor nationally crafted standards such as the Common Core and would really prefer, you know, education standards by Hoosiers for Hoosiers is what he's said before. So it's very likely that he would support a move that would take Indiana away from common standards.
What are the concerns about Common Core that, you know, that led to this legislation?
You know, there's a couple of different sets of concerns that we've heard here in Indiana. The group that's been most active in the State House conversations, Hoosiers Against the Common Core, is a conservative group. They don't like the idea of federal intrusion into state-level education policy, and they're really concerned about the rigor of the Common Core. The parents that started the group, Heather Crossan and Aaron Tuttle, their kids attend private schools in the Indianapolis area, and they've switched over to a math curriculum because of the Common Core that Crossan and Tuttle say is less challenging than the work that their older kids had did while they were at the same schools, and that they don't think is going to really set them up for a foundation in math that will prepare them. So there's some concerns about rigor. There's also a lot of concerns on the other side of the aisle, maybe a more liberal criticism of the Common Core that, you know, all of the standardization is going to lead to more testing and more assessments, and that's something that a lot of other parents are concerned about as well.
Right. So apparently this effort to drop it has bipartisan support.
It does. It does. Now, at the State House level, I think a lot of the Democrats are still on board with the Common Core. They still would like to see Indiana stick with the majority of states that have adopted these standards right now. It's 45 states, and then Minnesota has adopted the English Language Arts Common Core standards, but not the math standards. So at this point, pretty much everyone else has signed on to Common Core, and if Indiana goes a different direction, we will be the first.
Now, are opponents concerned that dropping Common Core will put Indiana out of step or even behind other states?
What's really interesting is the draft standards I talked about earlier, the attempt to write new standards. It doesn't sound like we've managed to make anyone happy. People who liked the Common Core and wanted to keep it in Indiana have criticized the new standards for being too broad, for not drilling in deep enough, for, you know, having more content than, you know, teachers could realistically cover in a single year. People who oppose the Common Core don't like the draft standards because they do pull on some of the ideas that were found in Common Core and look in some ways a lot like the Common Core standards that they would replace.
So you have apparently folks on both sides have some issues with it. Some that the standards wouldn't be rigorous enough, and then others who say it would be too rigorous.
You do. I don't know if too rigorous is the right word. I think the real concern is that, you know, one of the problems that with the former Indiana academic standards, the standards that the state had prior to 2010 when the State Board adopted the Common Core, was there were just too many standards. You know, teachers only have kids for 9-10 months out of the year, and there's only so much that material they can cover in that time. And if you if you get to the point, you know, at the end of the year, teachers are making decisions about which part of the standards are what they want to teach and what needs to be emphasized. And a lot of the times, you know, that's what's going to be on the I-STEP at the state test at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. The Common Core was supposed to solve that problem by really drilling into a few topics, but going very deep and making sure kids had the foundational skills that they needed.
Now, these new standards that the state is working on, what would the impact be on local school districts?
Well, you know, at this point, local school districts, many of them have already made a lot of moves towards adopting Common Core. They've adopted new textbooks that are aligned to the Common Core. They've looked at, you know, professional development for teachers. But really, in terms of implementation, it's kind of an across-the-board thing. You know, there are some school districts who've made a lot of strides towards Common Core. Others have been on a much slower timeline for implementing it. So it's going to depend on what the actual draft standards, what they look like in their final form when they go before the state board next month, how different they'll actually be. If they're a lot the same, I don't think teachers are going to have trouble transitioning to the new Indiana-specific standards and away from Common Core. If they're radically different, then I think there's going to be a lot of school districts who've, you know, made some significant investments in moving towards Common Core that are going to be pretty upset that they're going to have to backtrack. The sentiment I hear a lot from teachers is just they want a decision. They're tired of being in limbo. They're tired of this pause proposal. They just want to know what direction Indiana is headed next.
So we see situations where some school districts may have to, you know, buy new books after they just bought new books that were, you know, textbooks I'm talking about that were more in line with Common Core.
It's possible, yes. I mean, you know, I think the hope would be that districts are hoping that whatever standards Indiana ends up with are, you know, close enough to what they were doing or to the materials they've been using, that, you know, with some shifts, with maybe some supplemental materials, with online, for example, one of the benefits people have touted about Common Core is the ability for teachers to share resources not just within their state but across the country, that they would be able to find what they needed to supplement. If the Indiana standards are a true departure, you know, we're going to have some issues here in Indiana convincing textbook publishers to write textbooks that are well aligned to our standards, because obviously the majority of the market is using Common Core at this point.
Right, right. All right. Well, Ellie, anything else to add on this issue that we haven't touched on?
I mean, the one thing I would add is, at this point, if you're really interested in this process and you're concerned about what's happening at maybe your child's school, is there's still time to go online, go to the Indiana Department of Education's website, look at the new standards, and, you know, give them a read through and see what you think of what, you know, state education officials are proposing kids know and learn at each grade level. And if you see problems, offer feedback. There's a way to do that online, and they're accepting those comments through March 12th.
All right. Well, Ellie, we appreciate you taking part in the conversation here. Thank you a lot.
Thank you so much.
That's Ellie Moxley of State Impact Indiana speaking to us from Bloomington. She frequently files stories for WNIN News, and we certainly thank her for that. I'm joined in the studio now by EVSC Superintendent David Smith and the corporation's Chief Academic Officer, Valinda Stubbs. Thank you both for joining us today. I know it's a busy time in the schools. I'm glad you could find some time for us today. Well, let's start with a basic question here, and I guess, Valinda, perhaps we could start with you. As you see it, how will the dropping of the Common Core standards affect the EVSC's curriculum?
Well, we have been reviewing the new draft Indiana College and Career Readiness standards and looking at them both for English language arts reading and also math. What we've noticed in that review, we've had just a couple of weeks to do that analysis. But what we've noticed is that most of the content and skills that were found in Common Core, particularly in English language arts, are also in the new draft standards. There are some additional standards that have been added that are unique to Indiana, and they're organized a little differently than the way the Common Core was organized. But again, the majority of the content and skills are still embedded within those new draft standards. Mathematics, we've noticed in kindergarten through eighth grade, they're still fairly similar. One of the things we've noticed is making sure that there's vertical alignment, because the way the draft standards are presented, it's difficult to tell if there's that vertical alignment from grade level to grade level. the 9th through 12th grade standards are organized very differently than what the Common Core were organized in math. Mm-hmm. So that one, we're doing more analysis on that, but it is a that's where we see the biggest change is in the 9th through 12th in math.
I see. Well, Superintendent Smith, what would you like to see in these new standards? I'm guessing you've had at least a brief look at them.
Well, I have, and frankly, I'd like for this to stop being a topic of political debate. In the EVSC, we've invested over $6 million in resources. We've developed curriculum maps. We've done everything that the state said we should do from 2010 onward. So it's rather frustrating. I certainly would concur with the previous report in that our teachers want a decision.
Yeah.
Even though the state has taken pause, our students don't have that opportunity to take pause. Their education must continue. So from that perspective, we certainly want a decision. It's unfortunate, I think, that we've not had a great deal of time to review the standards. It seems to now be on a very fast track, which I understand. However, we certainly want our experts to be able to review. And I would also concur with Belinda. It seems as though the English standards have been virtually untouched. They still have a lot of Common Core flavor, which is basically more technical in nature than the previous Indiana academic standards. But I think there are some other considerations. It's also been in the news recently that the SAT has been undergoing revision. And the SAT test really, at the insistence of universities, have been revised to be more reflective of Common Core state standards. So I think one has to take into consideration how this will impact Indiana students when we look to universities outside of Indiana. So there are lots of considerations. And then naturally, you know, ISTEP is designed to assess success on standards that are currently in place. So all of that will have to be redone also.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about ISTEP. Well, when it comes to these new guidelines, how much does the EVSC and other school districts participate in, you know, how much input have you had on these new standards?
We had some teachers who participated in some input sessions on the draft standards. We also obviously have the opportunity, as any other constituent in the state, to provide input through the online mechanism through Department of Education until the 12th. But again, very quick turnaround. It takes a great deal of time to almost do a side-by-side comparison of the standards to see really how they differ and how they're similar.
So I'm guessing you'd rather have more time to look at it, but at the same time, as you were saying, Superintendent Smith, you've got to education doesn't stop. You have to keep moving, right?
Well, clearly it doesn't. That's why a decision, I hope, certainly is forthcoming in a very timely manner because, as Belinda alluded to, the math standards in high school, when you think about the algebra standards, they've really been interspersed throughout all of the standards. So we'll have to pull those math standards out because we still teach algebra as a set-aside course.
I see. Now, as we also heard in that report, we discussed a little bit about possibly having to invest in new materials and such when these standards change, especially the 9th through 12th grade. You say that looks like that's going to be quite a bit different than the Common Core. And so are we looking at a situation where you'd have to spend a lot of money on new materials?
I think the thing that we need to keep in mind is that teachers do so much more than just teach from that textbook. It's not just finding a textbook that aligns, which is an issue, but we actually take the standards and map the curriculum across the entire school year. We have to have standards to do that process. We have to know what it is we expect students to know and be able to do, and then map that across the course of the year. How does that roll out? How is it developmentally appropriate? What skills are prerequisite to later skills? And we do that with the expertise of our teachers. That's a very time-intensive process. Then after that's completed, we look at all the resources we have available, including textbooks, and find out where our gaps are and what additional resources we need to pull in to make sure that students are able to master those skills and concepts. So it's a very time-intensive process, and it's not something that teachers can accomplish overnight. So the more time we have to do that, the better our teachers are able to do their job.
And John, I'd like to interject that the EVSC, I think we're incredibly fortunate in this community because of our investment in technology and what our students already have at their disposal from a technological resource. And the work with ICATS and our e-learning coaches, we are incredibly well positioned to use resources of the digital nature. Mm-hmm. So we've not been reliant upon textbooks for quite some time. But to Valinda's point, it's incumbent upon everyone involved to make certain that our teachers have the time necessary to plan the lessons for our students so that they have the appropriate scope and sequence.
That's EVSC Superintendent David Smith. We also have with us this morning Valinda Stubbs. She's the head of academics for the EVSC. You're listening to The Trend on WNIN-FM. I'm John Gibson. Well, David, are you concerned at all that from a fiscal point of view, a financial point of view, that these changes, especially in those high school areas, might cause a fiscal challenge if materials have to be changed?
Well, I would prefer to look at it as the investment that we've already made, mm-hmm. based upon the guidance that we had received back in 2010. Uh-huh. So we can only spend $1 one time. Those investments have already been made. And moving forward, I doubt that we will invest in new resources in terms of textbooks, but we will continue to provide outstanding resources of the digital nature to our teachers. So it's more in terms of the resource of lost time also, not only for our students, but in terms of the preparation that all of our teachers have done in aligning the curriculum to content maps.
Yeah. Now, you touched on this a little bit. Do we expect these new standards will change the statewide testing, the ISTEF?
If the standards change, the test must change.
Yeah, yeah.
We're under a mandate right now to provide assessment that ensures college and career readiness. So we know the assessment is going to change by virtue of that. But with Indiana having unique standards, mm-hmm. they may have to have a unique test.
Right, right. Now, we've often heard criticism that teachers have to teach the test instead of, teaching the kids what they really need to know to succeed in life. Would you like to see less emphasis on state testing, or is it something that is not going to go away?
I'd actually like to see less of an emphasis on, or less of a singular emphasis on, the outcomes of that assessment, because uh-huh. a child is so much more than a test score. But I would point on the other side that the assessments are only supposed to measure what the state has said is important, that right. being the standards. So I would subscribe that we do not teach to the test. We teach to what the state has said is important in our child's life. Yeah. But I would suggest, in terms of accountability, if the only metric that you're going to hold a school accountable for is a static percent passing, that our kids are so much more than that.
Right. All right. Well, let's change gears just a little bit here. We all know it's been an icy winter, forcing the EVSC to use up all of its built-in snow days on the schedule, and then some. How much needs to be made up, and have you folks decided how that time lost will be made up?
John, I don't understand what you're talking about. It's a gorgeous sunny day outside.
It is very nice today, yes.
Well, we've lost about 8 days. We had four days built into our calendar for makeup days. The state did provide waivers because of the
polar vortex.
Yes, a word that I'd never want to hear again. But we do have to make up 2 days beyond what our calendar provided. We've already done that by extending the school day by 1 hour for 6 days. Mm-hmm. And we will have a decision shortly, certainly at the beginning of next week, in terms of how we will make up the day that we lost on Monday.
Right.
But we take several things in consideration. First and foremost, what's best for student mm-hmm. And student academic outcomes. I know many people have suggested, well, perhaps we tack on a Saturday. Well, if we tack on an extra day, that's about $4,500 in fuel. Mm-hmm. Then it's meals being prepared again. It's overtime for many of our employees. So those are things that we take into consideration. But the overarching factor is what's best for students.
And, right.
And we found, since we've done this now one time, that the overwhelming majority appreciate having that extra hour added on to 6 individual days, because that truly has been beneficial for our teachers to work with our students in more specific areas that we typically can't achieve.
So are you leaning towards adding that extra hour again for another 6 days? Is that the most likely way to solve the problem?
That is the most likely scenario.
Okay, but you haven't, it's not official just yet.
It isn't. I certainly want to discuss that with my board. They are an incredible group of people, very passionate about students, and want to do that in consultation with them.
Right. Now, of course, there's this state-mandated 180-day requirement, and that's where this all comes in. You've got to get those days in. Has there been any talk, or would you like to see that 180-day requirement changed? Could it even happen as part of these new standards?
I think those are two different topics, but really we're talking about the minimum of time that's required, or that the state says is required, to educate a child in
right.
Indiana. As you know, Kentucky has a different model. It's basically based on minutes, not number of days.
Uh-huh.
Indiana has, as you know, gone for 180 days. We have looked at various means within the EVSC on how to get the maximum impact out of the time that we have, and we always are looking in the best interest of students. So we look at our school day and the length of her school day, and more things may be coming out about that soon.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds good. Now, we're going to be hearing shortly from a woman who's been homeschooling her children, five children, in fact. Before we went on the air, I mentioned that to you. You said something about for folks who are considering homeschooling, that they might want to look into something called the Virtual Academy. Is that right?
Yes, John. We have our own EVSC Virtual Academy. It's a K through 12 program. We recently won the Award of Excellence for the Best Blended Learning. The individual that heads that up for us, Janet Leisner, has also been recognized as one of the top innovators in technology education. So we have an incredible program in our Virtual Academy. We actually have seen tremendous growth in families that have homeschooled their students by using the Virtual Academy, actually having the best of both worlds.
So in other words, the family stays home, but they learn through the internet.
Right, and the curriculum provided by EVSC through the Virtual Academy.
We also provide teachers that help support the family, and then the homeschool family provides a coach that works with the student at home. We have found that model to be very successful, where students are actually engaged. Sometimes families try online learning and think that just by sitting the child in front of the computer, it's going to be successful. And sometimes that is not always the most successful endeavor. Mm-hmm. And so our model blends that support of teachers as well as someone at home who is that learning coach for the student. And we've had some really great success stories.
Yeah. Now, you just getting back to Common Core here, we have just a couple of minutes left. So you've been looking it over for a couple of weeks. You say there's a deadline approaching?
Yes. The deadline for public input via the internet is March 12th, next week.
Mm-hmm.
The assumption is that all that input from across the state will be taken into consideration on the final decision.
So folks listening today can go online and put in their 2 cents.
They go onto the Department of Ed website and they can review the standards, and then there is a mechanism to provide input.
Excellent. All right, well, you also mentioned testing, and I know it's been in the news lately that the SAT apparently has gone through a change. What do we know about that, and how is that going to change preparing kids for college?
It just recently was released. Our understanding through the recent release is that it is aligned more with Common Core.
I see.
And that this was done as a result of universities wanting to make sure that students were prepared for the rigor of post-12 education. And so we're still, again, reviewing some of those changes to see how that may impact.
Yes, and how apparently they will not be quite the same as the state standards that Indiana will be calling for.
Exactly.
Excellent. All right. Well, I'd certainly like to thank EVSC Superintendent David Smith and the school district's head of academics, Valinda Stubbs, for joining us today. We certainly appreciate it. I know you folks are very busy. Thanks for coming in. We certainly appreciate it. We will take a short break, and then we'll hear from a local woman who's educating her kids through unschooling. And later in the program, Diane Barron from Montessori Academy will join us. This is The Trend on WNIN. Stay with us.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard and hoping to pass.
it right down to the bone. And the guy behind you won't leave you alone. Ring, ring goes the bell. The cook in the lunchroom's ready to sell.
Good afternoon. It's 12:30 Central Time. Support comes in part from Rabin Tire and Auto Service, a proud sponsor of WNIN programming. Rabin offers a selection of tire brands, including Michelin and Goodyear, along with complete auto service and recommended maintenance by trained technicians. Information on the web at rabintire.com. Support comes in part from Evansville Day School, partnering with parents to offer a student-centered education program for students junior pre-kindergarten through 12th grade. More information at evansvilledayschool.org or 812-476-3039. It's time now to go back to the trend and John Gibson.
While most parents send their children to public or parochial schools, a growing number choose homeschooling. I sat down this week with Shonda K. Rodenberg of Evansville, and I asked her why she chooses to teach her kids at home.
I never intended to homeschool. It mm-hmm. wasn't something I was interested in or that I ever thought that I would engage in. But when I had my, when my daughter was old enough to start attending school, she went for half a day of kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that, this was actually in New Hampshire.
Oh, really?
We were living in New Hampshire at the time.
Uh-huh.
And I found that when she would come home from her half day, we would do a lot of learning together.
Mm-hmm.
The school that she was in was a wonderful school, and her teacher was very supportive of her learning, but she was the only child in her class who could read
yeah.
at that stage.
And she was ahead of a lot of other kids.
She was. And so we decided after a year of kindergarten, I thought, well, I could do the first grade.
Mm-hmm.
I think I could do that on my own,
uh-huh.
Only because I knew that the supplementing that I was doing to her education, you know, surpassed what she was receiving in school. And
uh-huh.
I was in conversation with her teacher, and he offered support, you know.
So the teacher was supportive yeah. of the idea.
Yeah, he was a really kind man, a wonderful man. And so, you know, I was nervous about the whole endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have any grand vision or, you know, I'll do this forever or an educational philosophy at that point. I just thought, we're doing so much at home, why not just be at home?
You know? So how long have you been doing the homeschooling?
She's in college now.
I see.
And we homeschooled all the way through high school. She had a little stint. She and my son Ezra had a little stint in school for a couple months in first and third grade, but mm-hmm. we found the same thing was true then, and so.
I see. So you have two children?
I have five.
A total of five children. Have they all been homeschooled?
Yes.
Wow.
They have.
That
they have.
Sounds like quite an effort.
It is. It is, and at the same time, I think because our educational philosophy is more a lifestyle, mm-hmm. it really isn't quite as rigid, I think, and inflexible as people might think.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have to get a license or a waiver to homeschool or unschool? How is it supervised, I guess?
The state standards vary.
Mm-hmm.
In New Hampshire, they were very stringent, and we had to be evaluated every year by a teacher, or the children had to pass standardized tests.
I see.
In Indiana, you have a lot more freedom. Mm. You don't have to have your curriculum approved. You just have to let the state know how many children you're homeschooling.
Is there any testing in Indiana?
There's no required testing.
Hmm.
No. I mean, obviously, the children will be tested if they attempt to go to college. They'll have to take the same, you know, SAT,
uh-huh.
ACT tests that anyone else will. But no, they're not required every year to be tested. So.
Now, I know I've heard of homeschooling. I've heard the term unschooling. You have another term for what you've done at home.
Right. We do what I call eclectic homeschooling, which means that we take all the bits that we think work best for our family from different schools of thought, educational
mm-hmm.
schools of thought. So that means that, you know, there might be aspects of classical education that we use the trivium. Mm-hmm. There might also be, huge expanses of free time for mm-hmm. the children, you know, depending on where they are.
Sure, sure.
We reevaluate as a family every few months and see where everyone is. And
I see. Well, can you describe a typical homeschooling day for your children?
Yes. Well, we have a schedule. Right now what we're doing is, and we've been doing this for 2 or 3 years now, uh-huh. So it's working well where we are with in terms of the ages of the kids. Because, you know, homeschooling, when you homeschool a large family, you have many different grade levels uh-huh. that you're working with at the same time.
Sure, sure.
So we do one subject or group of subjects a day, and we do in-depth study of those subjects. Uh-huh. So on Mondays, we might study language arts, and that might include Shakespeare, which we're all obsessed with right now.
Yeah.
We will be doing little bits and pieces from a literature textbook, a classical literature textbook, mm-hmm. and, you know, questions that evaluate reading comprehension.
And like you say, you have to do this on all different levels because you have
right.
children who are all different ages.
Right, and that's why I think for us, the one group of subjects a day works well. Also because, you know, when my kids are learning something, they don't like to be yanked into something else after 40 or, you
yeah,
know, 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that allows us to really dig deeper into the topic. And
mm-hmm.
yeah.
So you say you follow a schedule. I mean, is it much of a regiment compared to, say, what goes on in a typical classroom?
No, because, you know, I mean, that's essentially the definition of unschooling is supposed to. It doesn't mean unlearning. It
right,
doesn't mean
right.
not learning. It means learning without all the bells and whistles that go along with school, the stopping and starting, the lining up, the, mm-hmm. you know, the check marks and grades. So with our schedule in unschooling, we're able to have a more natural rhythm mm-hmm. to the day, you know, instead of when the kids are really enjoying something, I don't have to ring a bell and say, okay, now it's time for math.
Or, right, right.
You know.
Well, now, by eliminating the classroom experience, are you concerned that your children would have trouble, you know, socializing or dealing with other people in general?
That's the question we get asked all the time,
uh-huh.
yeah. No, they are very involved in their communities. My son Ezra, who was just accepted at Earlham College,
uh-huh.
And that's probably where he'll go, he is involved in the Civil Air Patrol. He's on an archery team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he has many friends. He went to the Health Science Institute through Deaconess Hospital. That's a 2-week-long residency for mm-hmm. children who are interested in the medical health field, which he is. So they're very active and involved in, you know, groups
yeah.
with other children. And it's not difficult to do that. When we started homeschooling, it was more difficult because homeschoolers were sort of a fringe. I uh-huh. think it's becoming more popular and common.
So the movement is growing?
It
you
is,
see it?
Definitely.
Do you have
right.
any idea how many people are
so
doing it these
easier.
Days?
So much easier. Oh, I just read a statistic recently. I think when I started, it was like 2%. And
mm-hmm.
now it's, I think, closer to 10,
yeah.
you know, that are maybe not homeschooled, but are involved in some sort of alternative form of education.
Right.
So.
Well, I'm guessing it's not for everybody. To whom would you recommend unschooling? You mentioned that your kids are, or at least one of your kids, was way ahead of the kids in
yeah.
school. Is that the kind of thing, or the kind of folks you would recommend it for,
no.
or is it better or a possibility for lots of parents?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, in the beginning, it really, you know, I was such an amateur when I started homeschooling my daughter Clara, but mm-hmm. our philosophy has really changed. And I wouldn't say that it's for everyone. I mean, you have to have a lot of patience and
uh-huh.
a sense of humor, and you have to be really curious yourself. I think that's huge. You know, if
uh-huh.
your children see you are interested in learning, they are interested in learning. They
mm-hmm.
model what you do. So I would say if you're someone who, you know, loves spending time with your kids, you hate to see them go, you hate to see them get on the bus, and you are always seeking out information yourself,
mm-hmm.
it would be a wonderful option for you.
I see. Not, I guess it would eliminate the option of having, say, your own job or your own career. I mean, there has to be a parent there all the time?
No. Actually, I'm a nurse.
Oh, is that right?
And a teacher. Yeah. So.
How do you possibly balance all of that?
Well, I'm a part-time nurse.
I see.
I work part-time. Nursing hours are very flexible. I work with retired nuns,
uh-huh.
and I'm a teacher online. And so I'm able, you know,
to work from home?
To work from home and work part-time outside of the home. And so, you know, there are ways to work around those schedules. My husband mm-hmm. also teaches from home online. So we have some flexibility, but we do both still have jobs and, mm-hmm. you know, manage it all at the same time.
Wow. Well, all right. Well, anything else to add about the benefits of unschooling?
I think, you know, for me, the greatest benefits are that children, when they are homeschooled or unschooled, they are encouraged to think of their education as their own and to mm-hmm. take possession of that education. And I think that is critical. I mean, I think if there's a, you know, a soapbox that I would get up on, it would be that the importance of children understanding that education isn't something that's bestowed from on high, uh-huh. but is something they work out every day and that it never ends.
Yeah.
It's never over.
That's Shonda K. Rodenberg of Evansville. She and her husband have taught their 5 children at home in what she describes as eclectic homeschooling. This is The Trend on WNIN-FM. I'm John Gibson. And another form of uncommon education can be found at Montessori Academy on Evansville's east side. Diane Barron is the administrator at the local Montessori, and she joins us live in the studio. Diane, thank you for coming in today.
You're welcome.
We certainly appreciate it. Well, can you tell us, we've been talking, of course, about Common Core, but I'm guessing the dropping of the Common Core standards won't affect Montessori's curriculum in any way, right?
No, it really won't. We really like to, we know that we have an obligation for the kids who are transitioning into traditional school to be ready. Mm-hmm. And so no matter what they do at the Common Core, typically we're meeting, maybe even exceeding that in some cases, mm-hmm. especially being a smaller school where we can direct it as we need it for our audience, so to speak. So, you know, it's not going to make any difference. Our kids are still going to be reading books in kindergarten. They're still going to be adding numbers into the thousands. And, you know, there's a lot that we do with social studies and geography mm-hmm. and things like that, even at a very young age. And so the kids are pretty broad-based, and they're more than ready for first grade. And then we do have a combined first through third grade program. And again, because they're not on the same timetable, as the previous person was saying, they can actually dive into curriculum a little bit deeper. Mm-hmm. You know, if science is a really big deal today, they can spend a half a day on science experiments and things like that.
Instead of just 45 minutes.
Exactly.
Or an hour.
Because they do get enthusiastic. And sometimes following the children, that's exactly what you get. You see a spark of enthusiasm. And instead of, you know, going, oh, I'm sorry that you're really excited, but we have to move on, you have the flexibility to spend a little bit more time. And it helps them fall in love with learning. Mm-hmm. And if they fall in love with learning, they're going to take in a lot more information and just be interested in what's going on around them.
Now, you mentioned Montessori. Essentially, it goes to third grade. The kids are, what age group do
okay.
you folks serve?
Our focus is age 3 through kindergarten. That's our main focus. Uh-huh. We have about 120, 25 kids in that age group. Uh-huh. And then we have one combined first through third grade program, and it's a teacher-recommended program because we only have that one classroom. Uh-huh. And so each year as those third graders graduate out, that gives us openings for first grade. So one of the key components for a child that will be successful in that first through third grade program is having that passion and that love of learning. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll say in that class in any given year, there are probably several children who are truly gifted. Mm-hmm. There's a large majority who are kids who just love school and they're going to do well. Mm-hmm. And then there, on occasion, are even a few children with learning disabilities because our hands-on approach and the fact that we have a flexible timetable lends itself to some learning disabilities. So it's really quite a mix of children. And that's why each year in the middle of the kindergarten year, the teachers will have a meeting and they'll say, you know what, here are some children in each of our classes that we feel really strongly might benefit from being in our elementary program. Mm-hmm. And then we'll talk to the parents and we'll fill, it's, you know, really just 6 to 9 spaces each year. And in any given year, we'll have 30 to 40 kindergartners. Uh-huh. So we'll offer those places to those parents. And, you know, they're always welcome to come in and sit in and see what that class is about.
Right. Now, we mentioned Common Core isn't really going to affect Montessori mm-hmm. so much. I'm guessing are there some state mandates that that you folks have to follow, a private school like Montessori?
With a private school, not really. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things we tell parents when we come in, that there are things, particularly with Montessori, not so much with the older kids, because, as I said, we have an obligation to get them ready for when they transition to traditional school. Uh-huh. But with those younger ones, those 3 and 4 year olds, like if we were licensed by the state, they have to have a nap time at a very specific time in the day, and it uh-huh. has to go for a certain length of time. Well, the reality is, and one of the nice things about Montessori is, not all children are the same, really? And we don't treat them all the same. We try and figure out what their needs are and provide the right environment so they can be the best that they can be. Mm-hmm. So if your child's not a napper, so to speak, putting them in a nap room and they're not sleeping and they're bothering everybody or talking or just not comfortable, that doesn't make any sense. So if you take that child and you allow them to still be in the classroom, mm-hmm. but have a rest time where they can rest and listen to a story time laying down, that's going to be more beneficial, because if they fall asleep, great, we let them sleep. But if they're really not tired, they can be engaged in the story and they can follow it. So mm-hmm. that's just like a very minor example of, you know, providing what the child needs, because right. this individual needs it.
So it sounds like Indiana has, you know, provides quite a bit of freedom for private schools. Do you know how it compares yes. with other states?
I really don't. I'm just really familiar with what we need to do.
Mm-hmm. So. Which gives you lots of flexibility.
And it allows us to serve the individual. We don't treat the children as a group.
Uh-huh.
They're real. If you walked into one of our classrooms, you would see 20 to 25 kids doing different things. They don't develop at the same rate.
Sure.
So on occasion, you can have a 3-year-old who's actually reading a book. You might have a 5-year-old who's just now getting interested in math and counting and things like that.
Uh-huh.
But because that 5-year-old has already had 2 years of positive school experience and learning how to organize their work and falling in love with learning, when they start doing the math, they're truly ready to be doing the math. Mm-hmm. And they'll pick it up a little bit quicker than maybe another 5-year-old who hasn't already had a year or two of foundation.
I see. Now, can you tell us a little bit about the history of Montessori? I'm sure a lot of folks mm-hmm. are not familiar. Where did the Montessori schools begin? How have they grown over the years? Mm-hmm. Where are they now?
They continue to grow. Maria Montessori was a physician in Italy a little over 100 years ago, and it was mm-hmm. sort of uncommon for women to be in the medical profession, but fortunately for her, she was from a well-to-do family, and so people needed to humor her. And really, they didn't know what to do with her, and at one point, they said, you know what, just go work like with these children in the slums. They're running wild. You know, their parents are working 18-hour days. And, mm-hmm. you know, why don't you go see if you can do something with them? And so she just started working with small groups of children in a house that the government had given her. And one of the things she realized from the beginning was they needed to learn practical things in life. These children needed to grow up quick, and they uh-huh. needed to have a sense of independence, and they needed to know how to think and problem solve. And so she started teaching them about practical things, such as reading and writing, so that they could maneuver in the world a little bit better. She taught them how to cook. She taught them how to sew. She taught them how to take care of themselves. And little by little, the kids would say, can we do this? Can you show us that? And it became more academic. And so over time, it turned into a school, but not just a school of academics, mm-hmm. a school of learning how to think and as I said, problem solve and practical applications. And then what they started noticing over time was these kids started doing better than kids who were in traditional school, where they were just learning, you know, math and English.
Right.
These kids seemed to be a little bit more well-rounded. And that's how it started. And little by little, these schools, people who worked for her, you know, went out and opened up other schools. And over, you know, the last 100 years, it's become more and more popular. In Europe, it's been around forever and a day, and it's very common.
Right.
Here in the States, it's fairly common in the larger cities, particularly on the East and West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And here in Evansville, of course, well, and let me back up and say, in larger cities, what you find are Montessori programs designed to go from infancy all the way through high school.
Uh-huh.
So for us here in Evansville, we just focus on those foundation years for the most part of age 3 through kindergarten.
Right. But there are other programs that take it
all the way through yeah. high school. Absolutely.
All right. We're speaking with Diane Barron of Montessori Academy. This is The Trend on WNIN-FM. I'm John Gibson. We'll take a short break and we'll talk some more with Diane Barron of Montessori. Please stay with us.
This is The Trend on WNIN-FM Evansville, Henderson, and Owensboro, listener-supported public radio for the Tri-State. If you'd like to hear more programming like The Trend, more local programming, please consider making a contribution through our website at wnin.org and perhaps even become a member. That would be great. We'd love to have you, and you will be supporting the listening that you do each day. Again, you can do that at wnin.org.
You found The Trend on WNIN-FM. I'm John Gibson. Today's topic, uncommon education, and we're speaking with Diane Barron of Montessori Academy. Well, Diane, we talked a little bit about the history of Montessori, how it all got started. Can you tell us, you know, how you would describe a typical day at Montessori in Evansville? What can the students expect? What can the teachers do?
Okay. Well, one of the things is that they stay with the same teacher. Like, if you start at our program at age 3, and go through kindergarten, you are with the same teacher for all 3 years. So continuity is really important.
Uh-huh.
In each classroom, you're going to find age 3, 4, and kindergarten students, because those older ones are your role models for your younger ones. And the same thing when we are in our first through third grade class. It's a combined class. They're with the same teacher for all 3 years. So with those younger students in particular, when they start their day, they'll come in, they'll sit on circle, the teacher will talk with them about what the date is, the day, the year, the month, the something special going on. Is it Columbus Day? Is it your birthday?
Right,
could
right.
be whatever. And then one of the things that Montessori likes to do is, wherever possible, we like to give the children the opportunity to make decisions. So one of the very first ones is she's going to talk about what the snack is for that day. And let me tell you, when you're 3, 4, and 5, that's important.
Sure, sure.
So she's going to talk about it, make sure everybody knows what it is, what the quantities are. And then your first choice is when you want to have snack. Instead of saying, oh, everybody's going to be hungry at a certain time, that's just not true.
Right.
They get to choose when they want to have snack. She's going to give group lessons at that point. So everybody's learning, maybe, let's see, I saw someone doing a group lesson on vertebrates and invertebrates last week.
Mm-hmm.
And so she just had different examples. She said, you know, what the differences were. And then she puts that work on the shelf, and the children can choose to work on that anytime they would like. Uh-huh. Okay, once we do group lessons, then she's going to dismiss everyone to go to work one at a time. And, you know, John, you might be a typical three-year-old, and she'll say, where would you like to start working? Because if you choose, you're interested, and you're going to stay with it.
Right.
Where if I try and send you 20 minutes to math and 20 minutes to language and 20 minutes to, you know, sensorial or practical life, and you're not interested in math right now, what are you going to be doing?
Right.
You're going to be bothering all the other kids. You're going to be rolling on the floor. So letting you have a choice to say what you want to start working on gets you engaged. It makes you make a decision. You start building those concentration skills. People love that our kids leaving at the end of kindergarten are, you know, reading and doing some fairly sophisticated math. But what they don't always realize is the foundation that goes into that, learning how to make decisions. You don't wake up just one day and have 45 minutes of concentration skills. But there are works in our kindergarten program that take one and a half hours to complete, and our kids do it without thinking about it. Because when they were three, the works they had to do only took a few minutes. And then little by little, as they got more difficult and they were able to stay attentive to it, then they would build these concentration skills. So she's going to let you choose. You're going to work on that for as long as you like. Almost every instance, you're going to finish it because you like doing it.
Right, right.
Then you're going to put it away, and you're going to make another choice of a work that she's already shown you. And then at some point, you're going to get hungry. You're going to choose when you want to have a snack.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the work period, she's going to turn off the lights, tell you that it's time to put away. If you have a big workout, you're allowed to leave it out so you can come back to it maybe after lunch, for particularly those kindergartners. And then she's going to have a group time where maybe you're going to do sharing or you're going to do singing. You could have a story time. And
so lots of
and then you go to lunch. So,
so yeah.
Lots of opportunity to do lots of different things.
A variety of things, no doubt. Well, how can interested parents apply to get their children enrolled at Montessori?
Well, you don't have to apply, but what you do have to do is come and visit. We really want people to understand why it's different from a traditional approach. So we have something called an observation, and you just call and you schedule. It's always at 9:15 in the morning. It lasts until 11:15. You watch a little video that gives you a little bit of background on Montessori. We talk about the training the teachers take. They all have four-year degrees. They all have a year of Montessori training. They're all accredited by the American Montessori Society. We go through that. So they're comfortable with who their teacher is. And then we visit each of the classrooms, and then you can enroll.
Now, is there a waiting list? Is it difficult to get in?
There is not a waiting list. On occasion, there is, but usually within a month or two, we can get children in. At the moment, we're wide open for the fall. We have a website, MontessoriEvansville.org. That gives you lots and lots of information. If you're not quite sure this is for you, go visit the website and see if it's what you're looking for.
Now, we only have a moment left here. As we were speaking with the EVSE folks earlier, lots of snow and ice this day, this year, a lot of snow days.
Yeah.
Are you folks, do you make up those days?
Well, you know, normally we don't, but normally we're only talking a couple of days. This year, we are talking about doing the same makeup days. I think there are two coming up in April. We will probably make those up.
I see. So it's affecting all the schools, isn't it?
It is affecting everyone.
All right. Well, I'd certainly like to thank Diane Barron of Montessori Academy for coming in today. I'd also like to thank our other guest today, Evansville Vanderburgh School Superintendent David Smith, Valinda Stubbs of the EVSC, unschooler Shauna K. Rodenberg of Evansville, and, of course, Ellie Moxley of State Impact Indiana for helping us out. She gives us lots of good stories. I'm John Gibson. Thank you for joining us today. This is WNIN-FM, Evansville, Henderson, and Owensboro. With your support, we're building a better Tri-State together.